Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, all the people and the chips and the PC, and what? I can never remember that. I had that in my mind before we started. Welcome to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we are running the show this week. Both Dave and Nick have absconded from us, one step ahead of the law. Hopefully two steps when there's both of them.
That's right. They're working together.
Yep, that's a conspiracy, I think. At least that's the theory.
I like to think of them as like old-timey. They just broke out of the pokey, and they've got their leg irons on where they're sort of just hopping along and they're tied together.
Yeah.
Working their way through the countryside.
Which one's the ball and which one's the chain?
Yeah. Well.
The old man.
That's left to your own imagination.
Yep. So this is as a Soundbites. We're going to do some news. We're going to do some views. We're going to do some calls. Give us a call. Our studio line, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299. Or on the toll-free line, 1-800-790-0415. Operator is crouching by to answer your call.
That's right.
Mike will be handling the board and the calls this week.
And do you want to tell them how they can see us online?
And you can see us online on our Ustream feed if you go to our main website, soundbites.org.
Bites with a Y.
Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. I hope Francis comes to our birthday party.
That would be fun.
Down on the right-hand side is the live Ustream video link. You can also watch past shows on that link as well. But hi to all the Ustream viewers here. Speaking of our birthday show, coming up on Saturday, August 30th, which is not next Saturday, that's 2 weeks away, right?
2 weeks, yep.
2 more weeks away.
2 weeks, Jerry.
2 weeks, yep. we will be having our 25th anniversary birthday celebration. We will be broadcasting live from the Love and Cup at Park Point near RIT.
And I will
RIT.
Be in the studio directing everything, hopefully.
Yeah, nice. We let Dave out of the studio, so Mike's going to be back here running the board. We're going to be talking about some of the history of Soundbites, hopefully some of the long-time commentators. Yep. and guests will come.
You'll be signing autographs, of course.
Yep. again, we'll be broadcasting live from 12 to 2, Saturday, August 30th at the Love and Cup, which is at Park Point in Henrietta near RIT.
Yeah, get your picture taken with all the guys. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yep.
Cool. What do we got for news?
Yeah, should we go to the call first or do the news first?
News. We don't have one right now.
Oh, okay. All right. So our lines are open, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. In a very stunning piece of news, Netflix has announced that they have surpassed HBO in subscription revenue. Some of you old-timers might remember HBO as one of the first pay TV cable channels. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings proclaimed on his Facebook page that Netflix subscription rates have consistently been on the rise this past year, from nearly 500 million a year ago to 1.2 billion in the past year.
Wow.
While HBO subscriptions revenue has remained comparatively steady. So basically, Netflix is getting a lot more subscribers,
right.
And HBO is not. Although they're steady, so that means they're not losing as many subscribers.
But they also didn't have a price increase a couple of years ago?
Yeah. Netflix did an interesting thing where they tried to split their physical DVD service and their internet streaming service and charge separately for both. And a lot of people didn't like that, and we're very vocal about it.
Yeah.
What Hastings is also alluding to is he doesn't think that Netflix has actually slain Goliath. HBO dominates Netflix in the Emmys, HBO's $578 million profit dwarfed Netflix's $71 million profit in the last quarter. However, it is clear that the streaming service has set its sights on the cable giant. Netflix head of content. Ted Sarandos said last year, the goal is to become HBO faster than HBO can become us. HBO does have their own streaming app, HBO Go, so you can put that on your tablets and your smart TVs. HBO claims it isn't worried about Netflix, but the company's recent move to license some of its programming to Amazon, Netflix's rival, demonstrates that HBO understands the need to expand its streaming offerings beyond its own HBO Go, which is only available to subscribers. So unless you have a generous friend to get the password from. HBO may have the benefit of being part of the Hollywood establishment. Netflix is perfectly poised to disrupt Hollywood's business model. They offer entire seasons of shows at once, giving the content creators more control and not worrying about releasing ratings or viewership numbers. Perhaps Kevin Spacey summarized it best. Clearly, the success of the Netflix model proved one thing. The audience wants more control. If they want to binge, we should let them binge. HBO and the rest of Hollywood should take note. And Kevin Spacey has a couple of the most popular shows on Netflix. So he's an interesting person to listen to for the subscriptions. So let us know. Do you have a Netflix subscription? Do you also have an HBO subscription? Are you going to cut one out for the other? We are seeing more and more people cutting the cable cord and going to streaming on the internet. HBO is one of those kind of annoying sources that you can stream it, but you still have to pay for a cable TV subscription.
Time Warner would be well advised, I think, if they were to make HBO not only a cable channel or a series of channels, but a online streaming service as well, independent from the cable operators.
Yeah. Well,
because that way they could go head to head with Netflix and theater companies.
Yep. A lot of...
And they would do rather well, I think, because of the programming that they have.
Yep. Most of the time, when you ask the cable company, you know, to unbundle the packages, you know, I just want this channel, and this channel.
Right.
They say that's going to cost more than if you buy the bundle. But they're running these... The Time Warner locally here in Rochester is running these commercials now about don't pay for things you don't want. Oh, okay, I don't want all the shopping channels, but I do want BBC America. So just give me that.
Yeah, that'll be $85 a month just for that channel.
Yeah, because you have to buy it with all the rest of the channels, too.
They've got lots of licensing agreements, I'm sure.
And that's part of the issue with all these old licensing agreements where HBO had to go to the cable companies and say, please carry us because we're brand new. We don't know if people are going to pay extra for us, but if they do, we'll give you a big cut of it.
Right.
So now we've got a lot of those legacy licensing agreements.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we've got a call.
Yeah, let's go to the phones now. We'll take Victor from Irondequoit. How are you doing today, Victor? How can we help you?
I'm okay, guys. How about yourself?
Doing well, Victor. What's going on?
I'm tired of Adobe Reader. I was using Fox Reader, and I had a flashback this morning that Nick said something in maybe a month or two ago that something was wrong with Fox Reader. Is there something that you can recommend other than both of those?
Well, the problem isn't necessarily the reader. It's in the PDF format. The PDF format tends to get attacked quite frequently, and there are malicious exploits that can be put into PDF. And so both Adobe and Fox, it will update their readers to block those types of things. They are two. The Foxit reader is one of the most widely used non-Adobe readers. On the Apple side, we have Apple Preview built into the Mac to read PDF files. I don't know of another Windows-based reader offhand. Do you, Dennis?
I know that Foxit is definitely the most common reader.
Yeah.
Is that the open source model or open source?
It's a free reader. I don't think it's open source. But just like most programs, you got to make sure you keep the software up to date as they fix the problems that are found in the PDF format as well. Foxit says they have 275 million users.
So we're checking out other alternatives here.
Yeah.
I found a...
one thing you can...
Do you need to just view the PDFs, or do you need to be able to edit them?
Well, I just view them 99.9% of the time, but it'd be kind of intriguing, given just to be able to edit something. But that's not really important.
There's one called Nitro PDF that claims to be a free PDF reader and creator. We don't know much about them, but they're pretty high up in the Google search. One thing that is interesting is that Chrome and I think Firefox are building in PDF readers, so you don't actually need any additional software. You don't need the Adobe Reader. You don't need the Foxit Reader. Right in the web browser, when a PDF comes up, it will display in your browser window.
There are a couple others. There's one called Abby PDF Transformer Plus. Abby is spelled A-B-B-Y-Y.
They also make an OCR software, Abby
right.
Fine Reader.
Yep. Yeah, and there's another one called Wondershare that's, I believe, about $70, but it's also well-regarded. Those are two that you could definitely try out on the Windows platform.
Okay, I'm gonna Google it and give them a try. I just thought that maybe you guys had hands-on experience with any particular one.
No, unfortunately, our Windows guy, Dave, isn't here with us this week. So, but yeah, you might want to give Firefox and Chrome a try. So then that it embeds the PDF viewer right in the browser, and then it updates itself automatically for you.
Yeah, I use, Steve, I use Firefox primarily as my browser. But whenever I open up a PDF, it's always in...
Right, it hops it out
there's,
to the,
there's
the
a
viewer.
Yeah, there's a couple of plugins you can put into Firefox so that it reads it inside of the browser.
Oh, okay.
There's one called PDF Viewer.
Right.
It's got 3.5 rating. I know on Safari, with the PDF Viewer built in, will ask you if you want to trust the website. So some random PDF can't open up in your browser, which is how some of the drive-by downloads happen. And so... in Safari, it will ask you, you want to trust this website to view this PDF file, and you can choose yes or no.
This is on the add-ons, right, on Firefox?
Yeah, I Google Firefox PDF Reader, and the program called PDF Viewer is the first one that pops up.
All right, I think I'm going to try that right now. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep.
You got it.
That looks like it is open source. It's hosted on GitHub.
That's cool.
And it's from Mozilla, so that's from the Firefox people themselves.
Something just came to me when you said drive-by download.
Drive-by download, yeah.
That is the perfect name for a podcast. It is. It's
all right,
the perfect
we'll make
name
a note
for
of that
a podcast.
One.
Yep. But yeah, drive-by download is one way that malware gets into your computer. You go to a website and... something on that website, usually an ad, downloads software and installs behind the browser without you noticing. And that's how a lot of malware is getting in these days. We had a couple of customers at our store this week that ran into. And then a lot of times what happens is it will start popping up fake messages. Oh, you're infected. You better buy our program. And so it starts out with a fake ad that downloads some sort of malware, and then you get fake more ads trying to trick you into turning over your credit card information. If you're lucky, they only steal your money once. if you're not lucky, then your credit card number gets tossed around and it gets really really violated.
Wow.
We've heard some people that the credit card company is leaving the account open to help track the bad guys, and they can watch the geographic progression. So a stolen credit card number gets put on the internet, and then suddenly it's in use all over the world. If you don't notice that happening ahead of time, you may get a call from your credit card company. Were you in Milan buying shoes this morning?
Oh yeah.
No, I'm in Rochester today.
Yeah. No, I've had that happen. It wasn't with me, but it was with my dad. He was buying something online, or he got a call, and somebody asked, "Have you been buying suits in Toronto?" And he said, "No." And they said, "Okay, don't worry, we're on it.
Yeah.
Just checking."
Yeah,
it was an interesting call to get.
And we're close enough to Toronto that he could have been.
Right.
Take a day trip to Toronto and
sure.
get some suits.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's that drive-by download. It's the sneaky thing that comes in, and as I said, a lot of times it comes from ads, and a website needs the ads to pay for itself. That's why we don't have to pay for most websites, and so there's this sort of chain of where the ads come from. That the website has ads. There's ad services.
Right.
Google is probably one of the big ones with DoubleClick.
Mm-hmm.
And then the services buy ads from agency, and the agencies buy content from creatives, and the creatives hire freelancers. So there's this huge chain, and anybody along the way can sneak in some malware and have it not be caught. And so you can get malware on big websites like Facebook and PayPal because of an ad that showed up And usually they have a few hours to propagate before it's caught and disabled. But in those few hours, the bad guys can collect a lot of information.
That's for sure.
We had a an interesting case happen at our store a few months ago where they called, one of our customers called tech support, they thought. They Googled Mac Help, and the first three or four that come up are
not the real thing.
Well, they're ads
right.
for companies giving Mac Help. And quite often, and it's almost worse on Bing. If you go to Bing and Google Windows Help, there's more ads than there are legitimate companies. And you'd think
Microsoft in charge of that they would be like weeding through, especially yeah. stuff that's pirating their stuff.
Or maybe they intentionally don't look because they don't want to get accused of colluding between the search engine
massaging
the results.
Yeah, but if you're massaging the results to filter out, you know,
filter
stuff
out the bad
like
guys,
that,
yeah. And
that would be good,
it's
I would
not,
think.
It's a little sneaky because they're not necessarily bad guys, but what they do is they offer support for Windows and for Mac, and quite frequently, without knowing it, you know, they say it's going to be $200 or $300 and you pay the fee. You're actually buying a subscription service for 6 months of technical support.
Right.
So they are technically not doing anything illegal, but they didn't say they weren't Apple, or they didn't say they what you were actually buying. And then quite often they want remote access to your computer. So they say, oh, we'll log into your computer and fix the problem for you. And so they use a legitimate program, you know, log me in or go to my PC or TeamViewer. There are several legitimate remote control programs that we real tech people use.
Right.
And so the bad guys will use those to get into your computer and fix. Usually they'll fix whatever your problem actually was, but then they'll stay connected and they'll watch where you go, and they'll watch you go to Amazon and type your credit card number in. And we had a customer where they thought they were calling Dell support, and someone stayed connected and apparently was able to catch passwords and catch credit card numbers and run up her credit card bill. It was very annoying. And then she finally did call Dell up and said, oh my God, send us the computer and we'll make sure it never happens again. All righty, that music tells us that we're going to take our first sponsorship break here. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more with Dennis Worcester, myself, Steve Ray, and Mike at the board. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. This is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back. This is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm Michael Loden.
And we'd like to thank Michael for running the board today.
Yeah.
And Dennis for coming in, covering with Nick and Dave. It's always interesting manning the microphone and needing to keep talking all the time.
Being in that lead chair, suddenly yep. you realize, oh my goodness, I got to fill all this time.
Whatever you do, do not shut up.
That's right.
Do not shut up.
Just keep going.
It feels different over here. It's just weird being in this chair. And if you want to see what chair I'm in, you can watch our Ustream feed. Hi to the folks that are watching.
That's right.
You can go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And on the right-hand side is the live Ustream video link, and you can see us. You sort of have to peer through the microphone to see Dennis.
Trust me, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm still here.
All right, let's take a look at some of the news. Facebook has a data privacy class action suit going against it. More than 11,000 people have joined it, and it's still counting. Facebook is being sued by Europe. In
a band?
Yeah. Europe versus Facebook privacy campaign.
Okay.
Kicked off a legal initiative targeting Facebook a couple of weeks ago. A class action suit that's invited adult, non-commercial Facebook users located anywhere outside the U.S. and Canada to join in. Apparently, the rules are different in Europe. Europe is much more consumer-friendly than they are corporate-friendly, where the U.S. laws tend to be. The group says its civil action has pulled in more than 11,000 participants so far in the first weekend. The largest portion of the participants, nearly 50%, coming from German-speaking countries, and a very high percentage coming from the Netherlands, Finland, and then U.K., reasonable numbers from all over Europe and South America are coming in. Specifically, this class action is targeting unlawful acts on the part of Facebook, as the group sees it, the data use policy, which is invalid under the EU law, the absence of any effective consent to many types of the data use, supporting NASA's, the NSA's PRISM surveillance program.
Different group.
Big difference there. Tracking internet users on external website using like buttons. Monitoring and analyzing users through big data systems. The unlawful introduction of the graph search. And unauthorized passing on of user data to external applications. The suit has been brought at the Commercial Court for Vienna against Facebook's Irish subsidiary. The claimant is a Viennese lawyer and privacy expert, Max Schrems, who heads up the Europe versus Facebook group. Schrems will be the sole claimant named, meaning that there are no risks from the other participating claimants, nor will they need to pay any associated costs. The suit is being financed by an Austrian law firm, which will take 20% of any winnings as the legal provider. Damages are deliberately being set low at what Europe versus Facebook describes as a token, 500 euros per user. But there's a billion users, right?
Right. So I think they're just trying to set a precedent.
Yeah. If enough participants join, the cumulative impact could be much more substantial. The current 11,000 people in the class action suit add up to about 5.5 million euros. So what should we do here in America? Should we try to sue Facebook for data privacy and data collection? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Let us know how you feel. There've been a lot of concerns about how much data Facebook is collecting, how much data Google is collecting. And this was before we found out the NSA was collecting it too.
Right.
So it's that like, especially with Facebook, when you like something on somebody else's webpage, Facebook knows what webpage you're on. That may seem obvious, but people sometimes don't realize that.
Right.
And then because you've liked it, other people that go to that website will know that you liked it too, especially if they are a friend of yours. So an ad, and this is what bothers a lot of people, an ad can pop up on somebody's website saying, Steve liked this product. Okay, they didn't ask me. They're not paying me to use my name or my likeness. So I want a cut of that. So that's probably how we would do it in America. Give me a cut of that and then you can do it.
Right. Yeah. Well, assuming you didn't click through all of your rights when you signed up for the program.
And that's
what you do.
Yep. And that's the problem. When you sign up for any of these services, there's, the terms of service and that long, stuff that you agree to without reading. They basically say we're going to collect all this data. And that's how Facebook makes its money. The service is free to you because they are selling that data to people. How many people clicked, like on a diaper service? All right, we'll send you coupons for those, which is the innocuous way it works. But there's some subtle things that a lot of people are worried about. So say you go to, a website about heart disease. And suddenly your insurance rate goes up because you're researching heart disease. You might be getting sick. So we want to raise your insurance rates. So there's this real subtle interplay back there that all this big data that can be collated and linked, is supposed to be anonymous. It's not supposed to be known that it was you who clicked that link. But Facebook knows it because almost everyone stays logged into Facebook. Google knows it because you almost always log into to Google. So that's an issue. You log into your Facebook page in one browser window. Then you go to another browser window and start doing stuff. Right. You're still logged into Facebook. They know what other websites you're going to because they're putting a like button on those products.
That is why when I go on to Facebook and I'm going to go on to a website after I leave Facebook, yep. I log off of Facebook.
Yeah, specifically hit log out.
Of Facebook, yep. And then I go to the other website. I never click like
yep.
from the website. I click like from the website's Facebook page.
Yep. Right? Yeah, so log out of your Facebook account before you go anywhere else. Log out of your Google account. You check your Gmail, log out then, so then Google can't track you.
And also keep this in mind, if you're using Google's DNS servers, you know, 8.8.8.8 and 4.4.4.4, those are queried every single time you attempt to visit a website.
Yep.
Unless you're putting in the website's IP address, that DNS server knows, number one, where the request came from, and number two, what the request was, and that can quite easily be logged. So,
yep.
Keep that
in mind. And even that's your ISP. People it's the wrong word. People are worried about the NSA tracking you and Google tracking you. Your internet provider is tracking you inadvertently because you're asking them to take you to the internet. So your internet provider knows every single website you've ever gone to because they took you there.
Right.
And we're seeing law enforcement agencies subpoenaing ISP records to see, you know, what this person did. And theoretically, there's supposed to be reasonable cause to get the data. You know, we think he's a drug dealer, so let's check his internet history. But there's big concerns about phishing, where the law enforcement will look at all your history and they'll find that at one point, you did, you know, look up something illegal. In fact, I heard a great quote on a law show this week that the police, if the police follow you around, eventually they'll find something
right.
wrong, or they'll break your headlight for you. So everyone does little wrong things all the time, and without realizing it, and it doesn't really matter. But now, when we go back through your records, that you went to a website on making bombs, so we better watch you from now on.
Yeah, it's basically the digital equivalent of a cop walking behind you every step, and then waiting for you to say drop a gum wrapper on a sidewalk
yep.
so they can get you for. Littering,
for littering, yep, or jaywalking, or any of the minor crimes every day that people don't care about. Although, interestingly, there was a court case about that. A suspected drug dealer sued the, I think it was LA police, some large police organization, because they put a GPS tracker in his car. They did it in a public parking lot at like a mall, so they didn't invade the privacy of his house. But he claimed that having a GPS tracker on his car, because they were trying to find where he was selling his drugs, was a violation of his rights. And the judge agreed because one of the issues that when his car is parked at home, there's a right to privacy at home. So the police weren't allowed to track him. The police were arguing that it's just the same as assigning police officers to follow him around. It just costs the taxpayers less money than having a physical policeman.
Well, you can also make the argument that the car itself is private property, and once the cop intruded into the car...
Oh, it was on the outside of the car.
I know, but even so, it was still attached to
yeah.
what could be considered, because he owned the vehicle, private property.
Yep.
So the cop did not attach that tracker to the vehicle without a warrant
yep.
saying he could attach something to private property. That's
yeah.
another angle that they could have gone from.
Yep. So now the police are arguing that we're just trying to save money by using a GPS tracker instead of assigning police officers. So if you want to do 24-hour surveillance on someone, that's a dozen people every day that you have to hire to watch the guy. And you know... maybe he'll do something wrong. So that's been the whole point of the American judicial system, is you need to get a search warrant, which means you need to show cause to the judge. And you can't just put a GPS tracker on somebody. So now one of the other big things we've been reading about is that when you get pulled over for a routine traffic stop, a lot of police agencies are asking for your phone. And there are commercial boxes that can suck all the data off your phone, and then they can watch the GPS in your phone. Did you ever speed? Now, did you ever go 1 mile an hour over the posted speed limit? Now we can arrest you for speeding.
Well, I'm here to tell you, as a guy who wrote an app using GPS to try and track how fast you're going, the amount of float or fluffiness of that data is not statistically relevant to getting towards how fast you were going.
Yeah,
it's not quite as precise as people would think.
But we're getting there. It used to be that civilian GPS didn't have the accuracy that military did.
We still don't. Yeah. I mean, they've got sub 1 meter accuracy, and we've got, 3 or 10 meter accuracy. But the thing to do, if you're interested in electronic privacy, or if you're interested in learning what your rights are and who is really doing something about this, check out the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They're available. They have a great website at EFF.org. That's EFF for Electronic Frontier Foundation. They talk about how to defend your rights in the digital world. They have lawyers that work for them that help fight against what they feel are corporate injustices or governmental intrusions. So if you're interested in learning more about this and figuring out who might be on the side of privacy rather than on the side of themselves, be sure to check out the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They've got a really nice website that you can take a look at.
Yeah, and they're always sort of at the forefront of a lot of these digital rights issues and what's going on now. They have a take action section on their website to show you all the things that are happening right now that you might want to take action against. I think everyone just went there because it's
slowing down.
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing that happened to me this week. Something came in the mail. I went out to the mailbox, brought it back in, and it turned out to be a settlement check from a class action lawsuit. We were talking about class action lawsuits earlier. This one was a check for me for $40. And it turns out that this one was especially meaningful for me because it represents the last time that I ever talked to Steve Jobs. Years and years ago, when the iPad 1 first came out, I was really excited. This was a device that I could buy upfront. There were no monthly fees. It was a fantastic device with a 10-hour battery life. I got really excited about this, placed my order, and they offered data through AT&T. And they said, you can turn this data on and turn it off, and it will be unlimited. And I said, fantastic. How much is this? They said, $40 a month. And I said, that's fantastic. I'm going to jump in on this. And they eventually, AT&T changed their rules and said, oh, yeah, well, if you turn it off, you can come back in, but you can only use one of our current billing models. And their current billing models had done away with the unlimited plan, which was what I was really interested in.
It was like a month
later,
wasn't it?
Six weeks later, yeah. So there was a class action lawsuit, and I emailed Steve Jobs, sjobs@apple.com, and I said, Steve, I didn't want to try and get into a fight about him. I just wanted to find out what he thought about this. So I said, what is your opinion of what's going on here? And it was the only time I've ever emailed Steve Jobs, and I never really expected to get a response. But not long after that, he sent me a response that says, hey, it's between you and AT&T, which I kind of grumbled at, but he was mostly right.
The notorious short to the point emails that Steve Jobs always sends back.
Yes. So when Steve Jobs died, there were all sorts of news articles written, and one was written on CNN, and I had written on my blog about trading emails back and forth with Steve, and suddenly whoever was sourcing that article found my website and blogged that. So for a small period of time, I was a source for CNN, which was incredible. So this thing came in the mail, and it was bringing back all these memories and of remembering Steve and remembering the iPad and how excited I was.
And you just got $40 once. You didn't get the $40 a month. You're not allowed to do anymore.
Right. Yeah, no. As with a lot of things, it's always a little tricky to do that kind of thing. Are you bringing it back, Steve?
Let's bring back the dance there.
Uh-huh. Something like that.
All right.
Justin Timberlake.
We're going to take a short break here and hear some more of our fabulous underwriters.
Yeah.
You're listening to member-supported Soundbites on Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, and let us know what's going on with you. And we'll be right back after this.
I'm
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, everyone, to Soundbites here on this fine Saturday, August 16th. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And thanks to the guys for filling in for Nick and Dave this
week.
No
problem.
It's always interesting to be in the hot seat here.
Yeah, not a problem. I couldn't do it last week, but I'm here this week.
Yep. Phil had a fun time last week. He's not used to being announced on the air when he does his own music shifts, and so we had fun doing that and watching him struggle with the phone. We always joke about how Dave has so many buttons to push to get the phone working again, and then poor Phil isn't used to taking calls on the air.
Right.
But so, yeah, Mike is handling that really well. So we do have some lines open. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. See what's going wrong with your computers today.
If you guys have any Apple questions, whatsoever, we have two Apple people in studio.
This is your chance.
We can answer any and all Apple questions. Right now.
Yep.
So if you got any Apple question you can think of, if you have an Apple question, we probably have the answer to it.
And we'll do our best with the Windows and the Unix questions too.
A lot of furious Googling, but hey, we'll make it work.
Yep. Let's look at the poll from last week.
Okay.
Since Nick isn't here, we didn't get a new poll set up. So last week's poll was about the FCC trying to define what high-speed internet actually means.
Yes, that's a very relative term. Yep.
Okay. We were joking that when modems were running at 50K, you know, high speed was always 100 times faster than a modem. Well, that's 500K. Among the actual legitimate answers, we have 100 megabit per second. So that's 100,000K.
Okay.
is getting the majority of the votes. A lot of people think 1 gigabyte should be high speed. Maybe that's ultra speed.
Mm.
Very few people are doing 10 megabit or 5 megabit for high speed. And that's usually what high speed is these days.
Yeah.
Between 5 and 10
modem.
Megabit.
Right.
Cable or DSL. But of course, ludicrous speed is getting them.
Ludicrous speed, obviously a Spaceballs reference. Our friends Mel Brooks and his movie, the ripoff of the Star Wars franchise.
Yep. We've gone to plaid.
Right.
Never show that part again. but yes, it's interesting. In the U.S., kind of because of our history, we've got 100 years of copper wire buried in the ground, that we are trailing the world in broadband speeds because a lot of the other countries just started with fiber to begin with.
And because we just keep paying.
And just, yeah, we keep paying. And yeah, that great deal, you know, for 1 megabit for, you know, $50 a month is what people are paying. So that's
but
all they have to
there's
offer.
There's services like Greenlight Networks that are coming into town now that are offering higher speed at lower rates, much better than some of the other providers. And they are actually wiring up mostly new housing developments right now. But I think if you can get enough of your neighbors to all agree to become subscribers, they will come and run it.
Yep.
I'm not saying they'll come and do it next week, but they will make sure that you get on the rollout list.
Oops. They are using their email sign-up list. So when you go to their website, you can sign up for... it says sign up for service. We mentioned that
right.
A couple of weeks ago.
So when you go to your block party...
You're not actually signing up for service. You're signing up your intention to have interest in the service.
Right.
And the more people that sign up in a specific neighborhood kind of gives them an idea about where to go next.
Right. So when you meet your friends and for your weekly bridge game, or when you go to your block party, be sure to mention, hey, you know, it sure would be great if a bunch of us could get together and express some interest here.
And this is especially important when you start streaming video. We mentioned earlier about Netflix and cord cutters, that every video stream you send to each device takes up a lot of your bandwidth. And if you've got several people in the house watching different shows, that's a lot of extra bandwidth.
Hey, sure. Do you hate Time Warner? Or do you don't like, you know?
Right, yeah.
It tends to be... people that don't like their current provider will switch to the other one for a while. Whoever has the best deal, then they'll switch to the other one for a while. But unfortunately, with internet service, there's basically only two choices in town, the cable company and the phone company.
And this is very common all throughout the country. Yep.
You can get satellite internet service, but it's very slow and very expensive.
Very expensive.
And then there's still good old dial-up if you're way out in the boonies where they can't run wire. There's still companies offering dial. In fact, we've heard studies that AOL is still making a ton of money off of dial-up service because people have forgotten they have it.
The other nice thing
it's
about
just $20 a month on their credit card bill and they don't notice.
One of the things that people don't remember about AOL is that you can get a local access number in just about any city. So if you're a traveler and you're not quite sure, number one, if you're going to be able to find Wi-Fi where you are, or number two, if the Wi-Fi is going to be ridiculously expensive, which it tends to be at hotels. Sometimes they'll charge you a per day rate of $15 or $20 or $25, which is ludicrous to me. You can still, if you can find a phone line, you can dial into AOL, and it's still that same fee every month, no matter what city you're dialing in from.
Yep.
So still pretty popular.
And a lot of people are using these mobile hotspot devices.
Right.
Friend of mine's got one, $40 a month for unlimited data transmission.
Cool.
So it's basically, it's a cell phone without a phone in it.
And that's fine as long as you're in a place with cell phone
with
coverage.
With cell coverage, yeah. In fact, a lot of people may not realize that your existing smartphone, Android or iPhone, probably has a hotspot feature in it.
Right.
So it draws in cellular, like a phone, but then it broadcasts out a Wi-Fi signal that your computer, your tablet, your other devices can access, and use your phone as that hotspot to get on the internet. Now, depending on your carrier and your plan, that may be an extra charge.
Mm-hmm.
But for people that travel, or say you have a lake house and there's no internet there, you can use your cellular connection to get on the internet.
Right.
Just make very sure of your data cap, that you don't run out of your data cap. So that's where data caps are very annoying, and we don't like them either.
Oh, I love how they've transitioned everything to shared data plans now, so
yep.
that you don't necessarily know what your son or daughter is surfing or how much they've used, but you got to try and keep track of that so that you don't jump over. And it's different than it was just you on that single
yep.
data plan.
And so many of the cell plans now are doing unlimited minutes on unlimited text.
Right.
Because no one uses minutes and text anymore. It's all data plans and messaging. Yeah. In fact, that was one of the reasons why internet messaging started getting popular. You know, AOL Messenger, Apple's iMessage service.
ICQ,
because it doesn't use your cell minutes. It just uses data.
Right.
And so now the companies are realizing that and charging you more for the data. So it's interesting to see how the plans change over the years and how things are going.
Sounds like we've got a call.
Do we have Steve? Yep, we have Steve from Irondequoit. How you doing, Steve? What can we do for you today?
Well, I've got a friend's computer. It's got a problem.
Okay.
And they have a Dell Inspiron 570 that's running Windows Home 7 Home Premium Service Pack 1.
Okay.
And the problem they have is that their CPU usage is at 100% constantly.
Hmm.
There's something running in the background. We can't seem to figure out what's causing this.
Okay.
Of course, it makes the computer run exceedingly slow.
Right.
And we tried the security tango and cleaned up a lot of stuff that was on their computer, but still, in safe mode, it's the normal CPU usage. In normal mode, it's skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you can do is open the Windows Task Manager. And that will tell you what all the applications and processes running in the computer are. And you can sort by CPU usage and see what the name of the process that's using all the power is. Unfortunately, they may not help much because it might be something called WinService or some generic service name. In fact, generic service host is one of the other ones.
Yeah.
It's some program accessing the internet through one of the Windows regular services. But if you get lucky, you might be able to see the name of the program that's actually causing it to run so hot.
And this is where?
It's the Windows Task Manager, and you can get to it in a couple of different ways. One way is to hit Control-Alt-Delete, just once. Don't hold them down, because that's the key combination you use to restart your machine. So Control Alt Delete once, and that will bring up a screen where you can lock the screen, you can log off the screen, or you can run the task manager. And the task manager is basically just a window that pops up and will show you the processes running in your computer. It will show you how hard the computer is working, how much of the memory is being used.
Yeah, and I'm in it now. I've got the computer is running and Windows Live Messenger is running. Well, it actually says it's offline.
Right. Well, and there's two lines, or a couple of tabs there. One is applications and one is processes. And if you go to the process tab, that will give you more information about all the things that are using the processor, but that you don't get as good a name for it as well.
Okay.
And that might help you find out what is actually using all of your processor power.
Well, right now it's saying that Super Anti-Spyware is doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I know how that generally works, and it wasn't on there, even though I had the computer was doing this long before Super Anti-Spyware, so I knew that. But according to this, there is nothing else running.
And what is your processor usage at?
If I go to the performance, it says processor, my CPU is right up there at 100, and the physical, the kernel memory, the memory is at 796 megabytes.
So in some of those tabs, it should tell you which processes are running and show you how much of the processor it's using.
Okay, I went to services, and it's...
It may be two or three processes using 20 or 30% each that all add up to the 100.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
Yeah. How much memory does the computer have?
Then I'll have to go back.
If it doesn't have enough, then that can work the processor harder.
That I know.
Yep.
And the thing is that...
According to some of the research I'm doing here...
This person did not have any problems up until about a month or so ago. So I'm going to assume that she had enough memory.
It looks like the installed RAM on the Inspiron 570 is 8 gigs, which is...
That's more than enough.
Pretty decent amount. Yep. Especially for Windows 7, that should be a very comfortable amount.
It's the sort of thing that they had no problems until home. I actually have been looking at this for about a week or two.
Yep. So if it doesn't happen in safe mode, like you said, then it's definitely some piece of software that's running in full mode that is either what we call a runaway process, so it's not supposed to be using that much, or there's something else back there running it.
Right.
There are a couple of other process watchers. I'm trying to find them offhand, but usually the Windows Task Manager shows you all of the processes running, and you can tell which one is using up all the processor.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at services, and there's... What's PDI? Do you know? Is that processor or something or other?
It's a performance display interface, I think.
Yeah, and it says Windows Serve is... The description of it is that it's Windows Error Reporting Service. It's running, and it's at 3,956, so I'm sure that's... And
so that could be too. Some program has crashed and it's trying to write a report of the crash. So if you go to your event viewer, which is in, where is that, under Windows System Administrator Tools.
Yes.
You can see what the crash report is, and that might tell you what program is crashing and causing the processor to run.
Mm-hmm. And that, where is that under?
That's in the administrator tools, usually in the start menu. And then
all programs.
Usually, yeah, yep. And then
accessories, Adobe Avast,
So you've got Avast running in super anti-spyware? Or anti-malware?
Well, yeah, Avast antivirus and super anti-spyware, yeah. Yeah, so those are a couple of places you can check on to see that, and I've posted a couple of links in our list to get to the Windows Task Manager and find out what things are running.
Yep, we're on top
so
of the break.
Yeah, and now we've got our longer break here with the sound bites here on members supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back after these slightly longer breaks with Michael Oden, Dennis Wirster, and I'm Steve Ray. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Let us know what's going on with your computer. Let us know what you feel about the Facebook privacy issues or the tracking issues we're seeing now on the internet. And
back to school options.
Back to school options. Yep, a lot of people starting to look at buying a computer for the kids going off to school now. We joke at our store that you buy the first one when they go to school, and then let them buy theirs when they go when they graduate. So we'll be right back after these breaks. And this is Soundbites on Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome, everyone, back to Sound Bites here on Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Wirster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And Nick and Dave are both one step ahead of the law, or hopefully two steps ahead of the law
at
this
least.
Week. At least two steps, yep. So thanks to Dennis and Michael for filling in for them.
Happy to do it.
We've been talking about internet issues and different news happenings. And while Michael answers the phone, here's a story that Donald Trump is saying that he has hounded Apple into producing a large screen iPhone.
Right.
So sometimes success in business is largely about taking credit. The co-founders of Twitter, more accurately, say they're the who say they're the co-founders of Twitter, but sometimes even Steve Jobs takes more credit than he should at Apple. But now that he's gone, a new person has stepped into the limelight and appears to enjoy this. So Donald Trump, whose name is on hotels, Celebrity Apprentice, and other ventures, seems to be taking credit for Apple's latest iPhone rumors. True, no one's actually seen Apple's latest iPhone, but Trump revealed last week that he knows what's coming, and he knows what's coming thanks to the deep and influential pressure he has massaged and kneaded into Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Yeah.
In a tweet that was as forthright as it was human for Trump, I wonder if Apple is upset with me for hounding them over producing a large screen iPhone. I hear they will be doing it soon. It's long overdue.
Uh-huh.
True, Trump has used his megaphonic platform to call for a larger iPhone. Last October, he used Twitter to slaver. In addition, Apple must go to a larger screen. Now, ASAP, they're losing their standing in the market.
Uh-huh.
The fact that Trump has revealed that Apple is releasing a large screen iPhone soon surely does mean the company will be releasing it
right
soon.
Right, like he's going to be the next owner of the Bills.
Yep.
I would also like to say that Donald Trump has also called for the return of the McRib because he just loves it so much. And furthermore, I myself am also have been hounding Apple into producing a large screen iPhone. So when it finally does happen, you can all thank me because
thank Dennis.
Clearly I've been so influential and making my opinions known.
Yep. Well, you've got a line with Steve Jobs, you said.
Yeah, well, yes. He and I have traded email.
Yeah.
A single email, but email nonetheless.
Yeah, I just like the adjectives Nick wrote into this story. He is one heck of a writer.
Oh, he's pretty good. Megaphonic. That
Megaphonic.
And, I like that one.
Yep. Used Twitter to slaver.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Oh, boy. Another call already?
Another caller. Yeah. Should we take the phones?
Let's do it.
Let's talk to Erwin in Rochester. How you doing, Erwin? What can we do for you today?
Hello, Steve. I forgot to ask you this at a Q&A on Wednesday.
Oh, boy.
But I'm taking my daughter to Israel with me, and the tour director asked that we all make a copy of our passports and email them to her office.
Okay.
My daughter is a lawyer and is very, very scared of using the Internet, whereas I have already done all this. Is there any danger in scanning her passport and emailing it to a private person out in Arizona?
Do you trust this private person?
Absolutely.
Then there's your answer. I mean, it comes down to, if you gave somebody copies of information that uniquely identify you, and yep. you believe that they were going to use it for nefarious purposes, or you were concerned about that, then clearly you wouldn't share it with them. But if you trust them implicitly, and if you think that they are going to use this only for the best possible reasons, then I don't see a gigantic... Okay.
One of the bigger issues, though, is that email in general is not secure, and anyone along the way could potentially sniff the message. So,
yeah, that's what she's afraid of.
Yeah. Web mail services, Google Mail, Yahoo Mail, Apple's iCloud Mail, are all now encrypted end-to-end between you and the other end. So you might want to do it over a web mail client. Most desktop clients don't do encryption yet, and that's the problem of the mail provider. Many of them are starting to encrypt it, but then it gets encrypted between you and, say, Google. But then when Google sends it along to some other internet service, it has to be decrypted first.
Another approach would be to just go make a nice color photocopy of it. Stick it in an envelope, and what does a stamp cost these days?
Yep.
Whatever that is, send it. It will be there in a few days.
And yeah, we have plenty of time, so that's what I think my daughter is doing, whereas everybody else has sent it to this person who has a Gmail address, and she actually works for my son, so I can trust her.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you. I shall tell Susan to make a copy and put it in the mail, and the U.S. Postal Service will probably deliver it.
Yeah.
It's very likely.
Yeah, as long as they're still around.
Right.
Yes. So thank you very much for the answer, and I'll give that answer to Susan, and maybe she'll do it right away.
All right. Sounds You're great. Very welcome.
Okay. So thank you so much, gentlemen. Yep. Pleasure Goodbye. Talking to you.
Nice Thanks. To hear from you.
And have a good time in Israel.
Yeah.
It's one of those places I've always wanted to visit, but we'll probably never get around to it. I hate to travel. I don't mind being someplace, right. but I hate the travel of there. Actually getting there.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a lot of air
someone flight. Invent the transporter already. Darn it.
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry about this.
Oh boy. And the calls keep coming in.
Alrighty, let's now go to Brighton and talk to John. How are you doing today, John? What can we do for you?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah.
Yes, John Brown. I just left MacAv a moment ago.
All right.
Said hello to Jackie and left you a couple of jives to work on.
Oh, goody. Okay. More work when I get back Monday.
Work is good.
A little more work. But the reason I called is yesterday I downloaded a new app called Beats Music.
Yeah.
And I've signed up for it. I got about a month of free service through AT&T. But I think it's fantastic. Have you heard anything more about it? Because I've been playing it for about a day now, and it's great.
A little bit, yeah. Beats Music is a music streaming service.
Beats.
Okay. Yeah.
So I said beach.
Beats, yeah. It's a music streaming service similar to Pandora and Spotify. It was founded by Dr. Dre, but it doesn't just have rap on it. And then who's the other guy? Jimmy Iommi. It is one of the better streaming music services. In fact, it apparently is such a good service that Apple bought them last month or a couple months ago.
Right.
And so now Apple owns Beats, and the
Dr. Dre is now on the Apple board.
Dr. Dre is now on the Apple board, yeah. And which goes along with their diversity article they published the other day.
Right.
Some people say they just bought Beats to get Dr. Dre. Because he is a person of color, and the Beats Music streaming service will likely be incorporated into iTunes, which is Apple's music playing yep. app. But they already did iTunes Radio music streaming service, but nobody knows about it.
They tried about it.
Yeah.
And on top of it, my HTC One has Beats Sound built into it, and I can almost guarantee you that my HTC One is probably the last model that's going to have it because it's an Android.
Mm. Well, yeah. So Dr. Dre also, the Beats brand is also used for headphones, Beats by Dre. And so the joke there is it's a $300 headphone because it has Dr. Dre's name on the side of it. But they're really decent headphones. Apple did not buy the headphone line. They just bought the streaming music service, as far as I remember.
Right.
And so a lot of phones in the Android world have put these Beats speakers in the phone to get better music. Because typically phones have been notorious for tiny, crappy speakers, which is sort of inherently a problem in a phone, is to get really good music, you need a really big speaker. But in a tiny phone, you can't do much with big speakers. So that was the joke in the 80s with the boom boxes on. You know, you needed that 10-inch woofer to hear the beat.
And the 12 D-cell batteries.
And the 12 D-cell batteries that lasted an hour. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, the Beats music streaming service is pretty nice. Apple hasn't said they're going to cancel the service, so the expectation is it will keep running for a while because it does have a lot of subscribers and a very good reputation in the streaming service industry. But it was one of those not really side streaming services, but they didn't do much publicity outside of their own markets. So Pandora, Spotify, you know, Moog, some of the other streaming services were a little more popular. But Beats has a free trial available now. I'm on their website. I'm trying to see how much it is after the free trial ends. That's
$9.95 a month.
So $10 a month. Yeah, that's pretty common for most of the streaming services. A lot of the services are free if you don't mind an ad every now and then. And then the subscription allows you to not have as many ads. So $9.99 a month for one person and three devices, or $100 a year for a single user. Or if you happen to have AT&T Cellular on your phone, they actually have a pretty decent price for $15 a month. You get 5 people and 10 devices.
Wow.
So your whole family can listen to it.
Hmm.
So it's a neat way to get streaming music. The irony that I see from the history of it is we used to listen to the radio and then random songs played and you had to wait forever to hear your favorite song. Then we started buying CDs, and well, cassettes initially, making our own mixtapes, and then we had MP3 players, and so every song on your MP3 player was your favorite song.
Right.
And now we've gone back to streaming services, which is basically internet radio, where a random song plays.
It was your favorite songs, but it was only your favorite songs. There was no great way to discover new music because
nothing
you were
new.
Limited by what was on the player. But now people are interested in discovering new stuff. They want to hear stuff that's similar to the things that they like, but not identical. And through the Music Genome Project, we've got tools that can help us learn what songs are similar to the ones that we like, or find new music that we might be interested in.
Yep. And Beats Music website actually has a cute little headline. There's a new instrument in the Apple family.
Oh, boy.
Beats Music now.
Right.
Since Apple bought them. There were a lot of interesting stories. We talked about it. It started like 6-8 months ago.
Yeah.
That Apple was interested in buying Beats, and everyone was wondering why, because they've got iTunes Radio, they've got this, they've got that. Why do they need Beats? And then one morning, the press actually announced, there is a real PR story. It really did happen, and now we're all saying, wow, okay, why did they buy Beats?
Yeah, we're kind of waiting to see how that's going to shape up, see what's going to happen next.
But yeah, thanks, John. It's a really nice streaming service to be able to listen to that random streaming music and find music you like. And of course, all the streaming services have little buttons where you can jump to a music store, iTunes store, on many of the apps or some of the other stores to actually buy the song so that you can play it anytime you want and not have to wait for it to come back up on rotation again. But it was neat. I remember being at a radio station ages ago and just chatting with the DJ, and someone called in a song request, and he said, "Oh yeah, we'll get that on the air as soon as we can," and hung up and went back to chatting with me. And I said, "Why aren't you going to like write that down? Cue that up? Nah. If it's a popular song, it will come up in rotation anyway. And if it's not a popular song, we're not going to play it."
Right.
So that's one of the problems with especially top 40 radio these days, is that it's the same five songs day after day after day. In fact, my family, we took a day off and went to Seabreeze last week.
Nice.
And on the way to Seabreeze, which was what, half an hour drive?
Roughly, yeah.
We heard the same song three times. And actually, when we got to Seabreeze, it was playing. And at the end of the day, when we got back in the car, the same song was playing.
That's
again.
Right.
Because we took my wife's car, and she liked that type of station.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, having that streaming music, finding songs you like. Oops, sorry, John. And finding new music similar to what you like, and then being able to buy it on your devices. It's a really cool thing.
So what types of music, or, well, I guess these days you can, it's not just music, right? So you can get interesting, it's not just Amazon
podcast,
that's done this.
It's
Netflix telling you about movies that are similar to the ones you've watched. Or shows.
I almost don't listen to much music anymore because I've got podcasts that I listen to.
Uh-huh.
And so every now and then I'm driving with my son and we'll turn the actual radio on because I have to make sure he gets a good foundation in good old rock and roll.
Okay.
Because he rides with his mother and she listens to top 40 crap.
Okay.
But it's funny, yeah. Wow. There's so many places to get so much different.
There's no
content.
Shortage of content these days. I remember being a kid and I was in, you know, second grade or so, and I used to walk through the library and I used to say, man, I think with something I'm going to do as I get older is I'm going to read every book in this library. And I thought about this as I was in a library not long ago, and I said, you know what? I was either really ambitious as a kid or really dumb thinking that I could do that. And then, you know, seeing the explosion of the internet, explosion of the web, explosion of music and the accessibility of music and the portability of music, there's more content now than you will ever get to hear in or see in your entire lifetime. I think there's more hours of video being uploaded every hour to YouTube than you're likely to see in a year or even longer. It's just amazing the explosion of content that we've seen.
Yep. So 6 billion hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every month.
My goodness.
6 billion hours. So if just about everyone on Earth...
How long is 1 billion hours?
1 billion hours.
I'll do that.
So 100 hours of video every minute. And so if you can watch 100 hours in a minute, you could keep up with YouTube.
Did you say 1 billion with a B?
1 billion with a B.
Uploaded
so
how often?
6 billion hours a month.
So 1 billion hours is 114,000 years. So there's quite literally more content than you could ever see in real time on YouTube by itself.
Yeah, now, and
most of it's going to be useless or irrelevant to anything you're interested in.
But it's there, yeah. In fact, what was YouTube's April Fool's prank? They decided to shut down and said, thanks for the experiment, but now we're going
to
watch all your videos and we'll give
you
the ratings when we get back. Alrighty, that music lets us know. We're going to take a short break here, and you're going to hear from some of our fine sponsors. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And we will be right back after this on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
And welcome back to Soundbites here on Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And let's go right back to the phones, and we have Roger from Irondequoit. How you doing, Roger? What can we do for you?
Okay, well, I got two things. First thing is a Windows 8 trick. I don't know if you guys have looked at Classic Shell as a start menu for Windows 8.
I have seen that before, yes.
I tell you, I put it on my machine. Once it's on there, you can check in the settings for it to go directly to your desktop. When you boot up,
right?
Yep.
You just about cannot tell that I'm running Windows 8.
I have seen this.
Wasn't that an option they added in 8.1?
I think the place I saw it was actually in what we call a virtualization app. So if you have a Mac and you want to run Windows, like some of my clients do, then you might be interested in running Windows 8. And the problem with Windows 8 is that it looks so different. And on the desktop, it has all these features that sound great on a tablet computer or on a convertible computer that we call them, a laptop with a touchscreen, but on a traditional computer don't make a lot of sense. But Classic Shell brings back a lot of the features that people know and love and are very comfortable with. And I think it was Parallels that bundled this for a period of time with their product, and it really made a big difference.
Yep.
Yeah, my machine boots up. It looks like you're in Windows 7 with a standard Windows 7 style desktop. I chose the Windows 7 style start menu.
Yep.
And it's actually superior to anything Microsoft came out with. Not that that could be possible, but it does things. For instance, on a Windows start menu for Windows 7, if you want to go to control panel, you would roll your cursor over it, click on it, and wait for control panel to open.
Yeah.
Because it's now, as soon as you roll your cursor over control panel, it throws out a sub-menu with everything that's in control panel in alphabetical order.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, because Windows 8 is designed for touchscreen, which is nice if you have one, but most of us don't yet.
No, this is not for touchscreen. This is for use with a mouse.
Right, yeah, the mouse is mimicking the pointer. So with the Windows 8 regular interface, you swipe from the side and you get these menus. So Classic Shell allows you to get all that in now with the mouse pointer.
Right, okay, yeah. Yep. And I mean, even if you include something, I'm a neat freak with my desktop. Mm-hmm. So for instance, my programs like my antivirus, Malwarebytes, Super Anti-Spyware, CCleaner, and so on, I have it in a folder marked Utilities.
Yep.
I put that on my start menu. When I roll my cursor over Utilities, again, it throws out the sub-menu, and I can go directly to it without having to open the folder.
Yep. We're hearing that's going to be a more visible option in Windows 9. Apparently, Microsoft is realizing people don't like Windows 8.
And now I've got a Facebook question that I do not understand at all.
Okay, we'll do our best.
Let me preface it by saying I've never had any of the social media, MySpace, Facebook, nothing.
Okay.
Yet constantly in my email, I'm getting solicitations to be someone's friend on Facebook.
Right.
Every other day. And the real topper is I'm not quite sure what's going on because my email address is in Latin, but it could be taken to be Spanish. So everything I get in a solicitation from Facebook is in Spanish.
Does it tell you who is inviting you to join Facebook?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll get a list of like 11 people.
Okay. And these are people that you know?
Most of them, no. One person on the list I know.
Yeah, because that...
The rest of them, I have no idea.
That may be what happened, is friends can invite you to join Facebook, and then they'll invite you to play games incessantly. Cousin Doug, stop asking me to play whatever that game is you keep asking me. I don't play that game.
Yeah, Cousin Doug, cut it out.
Cousin Doug, yeah.
Be cool.
But yeah, so your friends can invite you to Facebook, and then their friends... This is the trick with Facebook, is friends of friends can see who they're friends with.
What?
Right. Okay, now this, I have one person I know who, will be on the list. The rest of them, going by the name, everyone is Hispanic, and I've never heard of any of their names before.
Yeah, what may have happened is that friend liked something somewhere or joined some service somewhere, and that service is looking in his address book and finding you, and maybe finding other people also.
So another way that Facebook gets into your privacy, even if you're not there.
And it may not just be Facebook itself. There are scam services that offer to do this for advertisers and malware providers.
Okay.
So they can send these messages out looking like they're coming through Facebook. They may not be. Or they're coming from somebody's compromised Facebook account. There are so many millions of loose passwords flying around that the bad guys try passwords on different services. And if they can get into somebody's account, they have access to their friends list.
Okay, because the address that it's coming from is Update Plus, and that it's like ZJ4OYAF44FSC at FacebookMail.com. Yeah, does that sound like one of these scam ones? Or
it doesn't sound legitimate to me. But
was FacebookMail.com actually Facebook?
I have no idea what it says, but...
Yeah. So, yeah, that doesn't sound like it's a legitimate friend request.
Okay. So it's a good thing that I've never done anything other than delete them.
Yeah. So there are fake Facebook services. Yeah, Facebook Mail seems to be a service, but it's not associated with Facebook itself.
Okay. So go ahead and just report it as spam and block it.
Yeah.
Well, they're claiming the admin organization is labeled to be...
Even who is?
Yeah, I did a who is search for FacebookMail.com. It says it's Facebook Incorporated, Menlo Park, California. I don't know if that's legit or not.
Yeah.
But you can, to be completely honest, you can submit anything you want to fill
in. Yeah, I've never had any of the social media. You know, to me, Facebook is just a way for people I really don't care about to spam me with their lives and expect me to go out.
Yep.
So.
That's why I stopped going to reunions, because it was just people handing me their resumes.
Oh, boy. No, I just went to a reunion a few weeks ago, and it turned out to be all right. Turned out to be okay.
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Give that a classic show.
Yeah.
It's a really great start menu. If Microsoft were to come out with a start menu for Windows 8, I think I would probably keep the classic shell.
8.1 has the feature now built into Windows, so you can boot directly to the desktop.
Right.
But it's hidden 4 or 5 screens down, and it's tricky to get to.
Right. With this, when you set up classic shell,
yep.
One of the options on setup is instruct Windows 8 to boot directly to the desktop.
Yep.
So, I mean, I never see it unless I open the charms. And the other neat thing is, with it, it gives you back in the desktop the old going to the lower right-hand corner and clicking to return to your desktop.
Yep.
Or rolling into there to get back to the desktop that you had in Windows 7.
Yep.
Okay.
All right,
okay,
thanks.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. And I'll put them down as spam then from Facebook. Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks, Roger. I'll talk to you next time.
And that's one of the problems of trying to use a spam filter and having the computer decide what spam is. Some people might want to get invited to things by their friends, and some people might not. And is it a fake message or a real message? Is it a real message for a fake product or a fake message for a real product?
Right.
So that's getting rough these days too.
All right. I think we've got one more caller.
We've got
another
caller here. Yep. Let's go to Ruth in Henrietta. How are you doing, Ruth? What can we do for you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Great, Steve. I called you last week to tell you I was getting my programs back on my new hard drive after mine did a classic fail.
Yep.
Well, I have this lovely graphics program that I used to have, but apparently it requires something called a PowerPC platform to load onto Mac, and the brand spiffy new service they put on my new hard drive apparently doesn't have it and doesn't recognize it.
Well, that's your computer. Apple stopped making PowerPCs in 2006 and shifted to Intel.
Yeah. And the trouble is, I tried to get help, and they told me, oh, so sorry, you have to go spend another $99 to get a whole new program.
What was the program?
It's called Print Shop.
Okay.
Yeah, you just need the new version of it.
Yep, they've revised that to bring it back up to speed with what the current computers are capable of and make it compatible. And it's not uncommon over time, especially over a period of a decade or more, to have to spend a little bit of money to make sure that your software stays up to date and that you retain all the new features that that they're offering.
Okay, I was hoping you had a trick or something, but I didn't have to
$10.99.
Well, you can use a different program. You don't have to use the PrintShop brand program. There are other graphics programs, Pixelmator and Acorn,
right,
are a couple of other graphics programs that let you draw your own graphics. One of the big things with PrintShop, though, is it includes a lot of clip art and templates.
Yes, so, I like it very much.
Yeah. So you could even use Apple's Pages, and there are lots of companies that make free templates for Pages to do greeting cards and calendars and programs like that as well. So I don't know if you have Apple if you have Apple Pages, that's only a $15 program if you don't have it already.
Okay.
And so that's something
I'll look
to look
into
at.
That.
Yep.
Okay, I'll look into that. Thank
sure.
you.
No problem.
Thanks for giving us a call, Ruth.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Yeah, it looks like PrintShop has a pretty nice licensing pack. It's the $99 is for three computers.
Oh,
so you can use it for your whole family. If you only want it on one computer, it's $79. So that's okay. $20 to get two more computers.
Well, that's not bad.
So that's not bad. Yeah, and that's PrintShop 3. You can go back to PrintShop 2 if you want some of the older versions. So she probably has PrintShop 1 for the Power PC.
Yeah, I remember using PrintShop in grade school with the Apple IIs. So it's a brand that's been around for a long
forever,
time.
Forever, yeah. It's currently sold by Matt Kiev, and the Mac version, at least. The Windows version is still Broderbund.
Is Matt Kiev still doing Hyper Studio?
Let's look. I'm on their website now. Hyper Studio is one of they still are. Hyper Studio is a neat program related to the old Hyper Card that
right.
Apple used to sell in the early 80s. If you grew up and went to school then, you probably played Oregon Trail in Hyper Card.
Yeah, well, we did Oregon Trail in the Apple IIs and moved up. We did a lot of stuff in high school in creating hypermedia with Hyper Studio.
Which is the precursor to the web, you know, the hyperlink on the web. You don't have to read web pages linearly. You can link to other pages anywhere around the web.
Uh-huh.
So, Hyper Studio is a neat little program. A lot of people used it for presentation software.
Right.
Before PowerPoint got popular.
Yes.
Before PowerPoint.
Right. Well, and then HyperCard HyperCard was used to build, back in the 90s, a game called Myst, where they did a lot of ray tracing and a lot of puzzle games to figure out.
And a lot of those old games have come out now for the iPad.
Yeah.
So the iPad of today has as much power as a big desktop computer of the 90s.
Oh, easily.
Easily,
Back when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, my mother had a Windows 95 of 8 megabytes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember those days. You could go with 4 or 8 and try and keep it.
And she was amazed when we upgraded to a Windows XP that had a lot more than that. She's like, oh my God, it runs so fast. I'm like, yes, it does. This is what happens when
when you buy a new technology machine after 6 or 7 years. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
So we're...
So what probably happened to Ruth is There used to be software on the Mac called Rosetta that would allow the Intel-based Macs to run the old PowerPC software. They stopped making that and stopped including that in System 10.6. 10.6 was the last one to do it, so 10.7, and that was 2010, was it?
Roughly.
So they gave you six years to get ready for the transition. So what she probably did when she bought her new hard drive is that she put a newer OS on it, and so her 16-year-old program or a 6-year-old program won't work anymore.
Right. Yeah, and we see that a lot. There are some software companies that just refuse to update their software. Either they don't know how, or they've already gotten rid of all their programmers, or all the programmers have gone on to do other things. And the system requirements for some of these tools, especially in education, really just haven't kept up with what the modern stuff is asking for.
So one thing you can do is partition your hard drive or get a second hard drive and put the older OS on it to run the older software. Or some people just get a second computer to run the old software on
There are a couple of retailers here in town that specialize in older equipment. So don't feel like you've got to jump to eBay or to go and check out somebody on Craigslist to try and get an older machine. There are people that will happily sell you one and support it, but just be sure to look around.
We at MacAv we sell used computers and generally they're older machines where people have upgraded. And we always have to be careful when we're selling them that they know it's an old machine and they know they're running old software.
Yeah.
And we had this guy that insisted on buying a PowerBook, you know, a 10-year-old computer, because all he was going to do is type letters.
Okay.
And then he came back a week later and mad that he couldn't play his Facebook games on it. Well, you didn't say you were going to play Facebook games. We told you it was old. You couldn't do things like that on such an old computer.
You almost have to make them write out specifically, here's what I'm going to do with it. Yeah. And then when you hand them the thing,
well, and then
show them the piece of paper.
Yep. Once they have it and, oh, I can get my email. Oh, I can go to websites. Not really on that old a machine.
Right. Yeah. It's you have to know what capabilities are. And the capabilities increase so quickly that it's tricky to keep all of that in line. And that's why people hire system administrators.
Yep.
Like me.
All righty. That music tells us that we're ready for another break. This is our last break of the show. We're almost through two whole hours of sound bites here. One more section left. And we will be right back after this. I am Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And give us a call at 966-JAZZ-5299. And we'll be right back on Sound Bites.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to Soundbites here on Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm Michael Loden.
And here we are in our last segment for this week. We do want to mention that everyone mark on your calendars. Soundbites is having our birthday, 25th anniversary coming up. We are going to be broadcasting live from the Lovin' Cup on August 30th from 12 to 2. That's at Park Point near RIT. We've been on the air as of now for 24 years, 11 months, and 13 days.
Tick-tock.
The actual anniversary is September 6th, but since that's not a Saturday, we decided to have our anniversary. We'll be broadcasting live, and hopefully it'll be a real great fun, real great party. So that's 2 weeks from today down at the Lovin' Cup. All righty, let's get back to the phones. Let's talk to Joe from Greece, New York. Hi, Joe. What can we do for you today?
I need to ask a question. I'm running Windows 8.1 Time Warner on a Dell computer. Time to time, I get it says Internet Explorer stop. How do I know if it's my computer, my Dell, Time Warner, or Windows 8.1?
Try a different browser. Download Firefox or Chrome. And if they keep working, then it's an Internet Explorer problem. If they also crash, it's probably a Windows problem.
Okay, because what happens is when I go to my reliability monitor, it says view technical advices, and then it says problem reporting. The solutions are when the solutions are available, they will appear in Action Center.
And they never do they?
No.
Yeah.
So I just had Time Warner here, and they put a new modem on, and it works fine. It's faster than the old one, but even I've had that problem even when I bypass Wi-Fi, I go direct to my computer. I still have that problem, and it, you know, every 4, 5, 7 days it goes crazy, and then it gets back again. But there's no way to tell if it's the Dell itself or if it's
Generally with something like that, you try a different program and see where the problem moves. If you try Firefox and it also has the problem, then it's not the browser. It's either Windows or the computer. So you kind of work your way back the chain to see where the problem is by trying different software, different services. Do you have another computer in your house that works okay?
I've got my old XP, but that's not online anymore. I use it as a storage cabinet.
Yep. Some people, if you have a tablet or a laptop, you can see if that works okay.
No, I'm not that far in advance. I'm an old man.
Yeah. I would start by trying Firefox or Chrome. When you first install them, both Firefox and Chrome will ask if you want to import all your IE bookmarks, so you don't have to worry about losing your bookmarks. And then both Firefox and Chrome work pretty much the same way as Internet Explorer to let you open your websites. Although they do call it bookmarks, IE calls it favorites. So all your favorite websites. Okay. In IE, will be called bookmarks in every other browser.
Right.
But yeah, that's probably the first place to start looking. It also wouldn't hurt, just in case, to run the Security Tango spyware scam, because a lot of the spyware can make changes to your Internet Explorer settings. To try to change the home page so it keeps infecting you again, to try to change your search page so you get different ad services popping up. So that's something that you can try to see if that helps the problem too.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. Bye now. Yep. So that's always tricky when you're having a problem, is where does it happen?
Right.
So you've got the program itself, you've got the operating system version, you've got the computer hardware, you've got your internet service. So you probably have a wireless router in your house, then you've got your internet router. So it's all these steps in the chain, and if any one piece breaks, then nothing works
apart.
Right, and it falls apart, and you don't know where to go next.
Put another thing that, like, put another error reporting thing is horrible.
Yeah, the Windows error reporting.
Why do they even bother trying to do it if they're going to be so bad at it?
Well, it's most of the error reports are very technical, and programmers would understand what it means and know how to fix it. But it doesn't help the end user to know any of that. It broke. I'm sorry. In fact, some of the greatest error message I've seen Firefox, when Firefox crashes and you reopen Firefox, well, this is embarrassing. I can't load the page you were back on. You want to try again?
I love that one.
So somebody was really having a good day when they wrote that error message into Firefox.
Back in the 90s, there was a third party OS that came out that was called BOS, and it was produced by Jean-Louis Gasset, who was heading up that project. And it was one of the things that Apple was considering to be buying. And they used to do OS error messages that were actually haiku.
Oh, yeah?
That were really impressive. It was like, the website you seek cannot be located, but countless more exist.
Instead of 404.
404, yeah. Program aborting.
We'll be here with a guru meditation.
That's right.
Yep.
Program aborting. Close all that you have worked on. You ask far too much.
Yep. I remember an old one on the DEC VAXs. I think it was the VAX used in college. Program lost. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh boy. All right. So Steve, it is back to school time.
Back to school time. Yes.
And people are headed back to school.
Horrible, dreaded words, and
thinking about the tech that they need to be successful.
Yeah, I got to go back on the 25th.
Uh huh.
Yep. So, and it used to be that you would get your kid a laptop,
right,
to send them off to school. Even now, high school, we're seeing, you know, kids using laptops, let alone college.
For sure.
But what we're seeing in the last year or so is alternatives to a full-blown laptop, including tablets like the iPad or Android tablets and the Chromebook. If you've listened for a while, you've probably heard Nick extol the virtues of his Chromebook.
He loves it.
Relatively inexpensive. Basically, all it is a web browser that gets you on the web, and that's 99% of what a lot of people do. I look at email. I look at websites. I can use Google Picasa to edit my photos.
Uh-huh.
I can use different websites there's video editing on the web, Google Docs for making all your documents on the web.
Right.
And it even works when you're off the web, so you don't have to be online all the time. But it's got Wi-Fi built in. You can go with a little more expensive model that has cellular built in, and I think you get 100 megs a month free or something like that.
Right.
And the Chromebooks, basically a laptop with a full keyboard.
Now, how's the price compare with a Chromebook versus what we think of as a traditional reasonable laptop? Now, I'm not talking about the laptop that they've got on the super mega doorbuster loss leader sale at your local big box store. I'm talking about a reasonably spec'd laptop with capabilities that are appropriate for a student.
Yep, and that's a little bit tricky too, because there are some, you know, $199 Chromebooks.
Uh-huh.
And that's not quite as capable as some of the other ones.
Right.
The big issue with Chromebooks is the memory they have installed. You know, the cheaper ones will have like 2 gigs of memory or probably 1 gig in that $199 model.
Uh-huh.
And then they don't have a traditional hard drive. They just have solid-state flash storage, which we are seeing to becoming more common in the bigger computers. But in the Chromebooks, you're looking at 16 gigs or 32 gigs maximum.
Okay.
So it's more like a phone.
Or tablet yeah.
storage, yeah. So in essence, you can think of a Chromebook as a tablet with a keyboard built in.
An actual keyboard.
An actual physical keyboard built in, yeah. To get a decent Chromebook, you know, 13-inch screen, you're looking in the $300-$350 range.
Okay.
So it's even cheaper than many tablets.
Right.
But again, that is, there's that issue with the local storage. The nice thing about Google Docs is that when you make your documents in Google Docs, they don't count towards your local storage because mm-hmm. they're all on the internet.
Right.
So in many cases, you don't need local storage at all. And some of the Chromebooks also have an SD card slot.
So you
put an SD card in and you have more local storage.
I see. And it's removable so that if you decide to get rid of this particular Chromebook and get a different one,
yep.
then you can move that quite easily.
And because it's Google Chrome, it's all based on
your Google ID.
Your Google ID. So you log into your Google account and poof, all of your documents are there already, even if it's not your Chromebook. Or if your Chromebook gets stolen, which is a big issue in schools, we sell sure. a bicycle lock for our computers in uh-huh. our education bundle. You get a new Chromebook, sign in with your Chrome ID. Google ID, and all of your documents are already still there because they were synced to the Google Cloud service in Google Docs. So it's and the other nice thing is they have very, very long battery life. Some of the Chromebooks have up to 8, 9, 10 hour battery life, very similar to a tablet, because there's no moving parts. There's
right.
no spinning hard drive. There's no mechanical device eating your battery life. So it's very inexpensive, and you get that really long battery life.
Well,
and the boot
really
time, it can boot in less than 10 seconds.
I was reading, or actually I was watching a movie about how they were optimizing the boot time of Chrome OS this this week, and they are taking out a lot of the crazy things that your computer does because so many different people and companies are involved. It's tricky to know precisely who's in charge of what and how all the things fit together.
And a lot of the mainstream OSs have started optimizing for boot time too because we hate that 30-second wait when it's trying to boot.
Right.
Alrighty, so that music tells us that you indeed have wasted 2 full hours here on this Saturday. My very special thanks to Nick and Dave for not coming in today.
Mine too.
And thank you to Dennis for covering, and to Mike for running the board. Join us next week when we'll be back again at 12 o'clock. Don't forget to check out our website, soundbites.org. You can watch past videos of the shows. We'll have the podcast up shortly. And coming up next, we've got George with the best German music you'll hear all week. And Mike is going to stay here and keep him on track as well. And so this is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you all next week.